Hey folks, if you're in Austin and you're looking to see some live music in the live music capital of the world, look no further than 2013-2014 Austin Chronicle Music Poll winner for Best All Ages Venue, Best Sounding Venue, and Best Venue. Strange Brew Lounge Side. Simply go to strangebrewloungeside.com, look on their calendar, and find out what's going on. From Joe Ely to Christopher Cross, Steve Poltz to Renfro, they're all playing there. Go to Strange Brew Lounge Side for yourself and see what Austin's best venue has to offer. That's strangebrewloungeside.com. Now let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. Yes, my guest is power pop legend Dwight Twilley. Yeah, I can't believe it. We have a phone conversation, which we had on Friday night. Fantastic conversation. We talk about his 40 years in the business and his newest album, Always, and his latest endeavors. He's been doing art for a while. He's thinking about showing it. So, fantastic conversation with power pop legend Dwight Twilley. Oh, man. I've been listening to his new album, Always, for the last few days. And, man, it's such a beautiful album. He's still making great albums. You can get this album at DwightTwilley.com or on iTunes, or it's even on Spotify. But his latest album, which he put out in November, is called Always, and it is fantastic. And listen, he's doing an in-store. If you live in Los Angeles, he's doing an in-store on Wednesday, January 14th at 8 p.m. at Wombledon Records, which is at 5123 York Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90042. And their phone number is 213-422-0069. So if you live in L.A., get out to Wombledon Records Wednesday, January 14th at 8 p.m. and enjoy yourself. It's a little sit-down in-store with Dwight Twilley. All right? We'll get to our conversation in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. I've been sick. It's been terrible. I had a weekend off from Skyrocket this whole last weekend, and I spent it doing nothing but laying on my couch and laying in my bed and eating soup and drinking warm drinks and drinking Mucinex juice, which is disgusting, and coughing things up. It's been terrible. I saw a lot of movies. I saw the interview. Let me tell you what's going on with that. Hey, man, this movie... Let me go easy on it, okay? To start off with... You know, something I enjoy is Abbott and Costello. And there's a thing that Seth Rogen and James Franco do that's great. When they just talk, it's hilarious. But did I think it was a great movie? No. I could see how somebody, if I was Kim Jong-un and I was a little crazy, I would be pretty offended by the movie. But otherwise, do I think it's like, does the president need to get involved? No. Do terrorists need to get involved? No, it's a movie. It's a comedy movie, and it's an okay movie. If I saw it on HBO, and I was just lying around, like I was sick, where was I gonna go? I was watching the interview. I was excited to watch it. Did I think it was great afterwards? No, I mean I thought some of it was funny. Yeah, I didn't think it was great though. So there you go. That's my review of the interview. Not amazing. But also not the most terrible movie in the world, but also not worth all this crazy controversy. I saw a lot of worse movies, I'll tell you that. And I saw some episodes of Friends. It's on Netflix now. I watched the first few episodes, and Phoebe and Joey really make me laugh on that show. So that's what I have to say about Friends. That's my review of things I saw when I was sick. Maybe I should write some reviews online of the movies. Who knows? Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the show. If this is your first time listening to the show, if you're a Dwight Twilley fan, you're coming to the show because you want to hear me have this conversation with Dwight, thank you. Welcome to the show. I have hundreds of conversations. This is episode 340, so there are 339 other conversations. You can scroll through the How Did I Get Here page. The newest 20 are always on iTunes. You can subscribe on iTunes and get a new episode every Tuesday and every Friday. You can go on Stitcher and make us one of your favorites. Once again, in your Stitcher feed, you will get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday. All right. So let's get to this conversation I had with Dwight Twilley. Normally, I do these shows face to face. We have conversations face to face. But on this one, Dwight's in Tulsa. I'm here. He's not coming here anytime soon. I'm not going up there anytime soon. But I did want to talk to him. I think his album Always is incredible. And I play a song at the end of the show. I play the title track from Always. It's fantastic. Stick around, listen to that song, and get the album. You can go to DwightTwilley.com and get a signed copy there. Or you can get it on iTunes. You can find it on Spotify. All the places where you find music, you will find Dwight Twilley music. Now, listen, if you don't by chance know Dwight Twilley, and you're listening to this show because you normally just listen to this show, you're in for a treat, man. Get out there, go through the music, and you will find some great music from Dwight Twilley. He's been putting out records for 40 years. We talk about that. In fact, he's doing an in-store in Los Angeles, California on Wednesday, January 14th at 8 p.m. at Wombleton Records. You can find them at 5123 York Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90042. All right? I'd like to thank Jan for helping me set up this conversation with Dwight. And I guess without further ado, let's get into it with my new pal, Dwight Twilley. Let's get down.
Yeah, it's regular stuff.
Okay.
Mailbox, final poster too.
Yeah.
Big time important stuff.
Well, you're in charge of your own music now.
Yes, pretty much.
And
yep.
this album Always, I assume, is like just like from you recorded it in your studio, produced it yourself.
Correct. Yep.
And it's all in your hands right now. Is that an incredibly great feeling or is it a little overwhelming?
Both.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The actual work of it, you know, when somebody in Sweden wants a CD, you're kind of responsible to get it to them.
Yeah. In some ways, though, it's nice to have control over what you do.
Oh, hell yeah.
I imagine when you were doing, like, the record Jungle or something, you had someone over your shoulder, you know, saying this or that, or insisting that you have choreographed football playing high school guys going into a shower.
Yeah, all that with the major labels, there was always somebody with a suit in the background calling the shots. Yeah. I know the first time that Phil and I, the Dwight Twilley Band, were on American Bandstand, we played I'm on Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we introduced our new follow-up single, Shark.
Yeah.
And everybody, there was actually radio stations that recorded it off American Bandstand and started playing it on the air.
And,
but there were some executive up in the top of the, you know, building, you know, with, you know, manicured fingernails, decided that that wasn't a very good idea because it sounded like we were taking advantage of the success of the movie Jaws.
Right.
So that never came out as a single.
It's funny that
it pissed us off so much we took it off our album.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's hard to find now.
Yeah, it's around though.
Yeah, yeah. My friend Corey has it, and I'm in a band called Skyrocket, and there's three of us that used to ride together all the time, and we called ourselves the Sharks. And every time we were coming home from a trip, that was the first song we'd listen to. I'm serious. Yeah. Hey, so tell me about Always. So you did that in your studio, and did you co-write any of that stuff? Because I don't have a physical thing to see that.
No, I always write all my music.
All your own
always
stuff?
Have. Yeah? Always have.
That's amazing. So you did this in your own studio. Who all did you have on the album? I know you had Ron on there. Ron Flint.
Oh, my God. That's quite a list.
Yeah.
I can read some of these names here. Let's see. Well, of course, we had Ron, like you said.
Yeah.
Ron Flint and Steve Allen. So we had the full 2020 experience.
Yeah.
And we had an interesting person was also James Barth, who co-engineered I'm on Fire.
Oh, wow.
All the way back to those days. Did strings. Can't really get through an album without asking Susan to come sing on something, Susan Calsill.
Yeah, you guys have a cool thing. I saw an old video from, I guess, the time of the Jungle record with her singing backup on Girls or something.
We've been singing together for years.
Yeah.
Susan is as the Sweetheart of the Universe.
That's what I've heard.
And then we have Mitch Easter. A lot of people know him. And the connoisseurs of music would know Jimmy Carstein, unbelievable drummer percussionist.
Right.
That went all the way back to being the drummer for Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, the amazing Tommy Keane.
Wow.
And then a real interesting one was, because what happened was, as we finished up our previous album, Soundtrack,
right,
towards the end of that album, Bill Pickott IV passed away. And
right,
we were really a team.
Yeah.
Jan Engineering and me and Bill constantly recording for the last 10 years or so.
Right.
So we were kind of felt weird about it, what direction to go. And it was suggested to us that why don't we call on some of our friends, because we'd never really did that much before. You know, we were just such a condensed music making machine. You know, if it just happened to happen, it would happen with some, you know, or somebody be in town, we'd have somebody play, but we never really needed to. And so I actually made an effort to actually, you know, ring up some of my friends and people I've worked with in the past and say, hey, you want to try something? And one of the interesting ones was, for years, fans have always asked about the lead break on the song, Sincerely.
Uh-huh.
Which was actually about 12 to 14 tracks of backwards guitars.
Oh, wow.
Which we recorded at Leon Russell's 40-track studio.
Wow.
Way back when,
yeah,
back in the day. And there didn't used to be 40 tracks then, by the way.
How did you do? Did you do slave machines, or did you just bounce shit down like old school?
Well, you didn't really have to when you had 40 tracks.
Well, how
you could afford to have 12 tracks of guitar.
Oh, okay, but how did you have 40 tracks when there wasn't a 40-track machine?
There was, actually.
Oh.
Leon Russell had one of the first.
Oh, wow.
Stevens, 40-track.
I have never heard of that.
Yeah, he had a couple of them. And we were among the first people to ever use one. And so in a short amount of time, we went from working on a TAC 4-track to working at Leon Russell's 40-track. That's just the way this business is. But anyway, some people for years have asked about that guitar part, which was done by Roger Lynn, who later on became famous for inventing the Lynn drum.
Oh, wow.
And he played on a number of my records through the years, and I hadn't talked to him in a long time. And I just called him, hey, Rog, you know, you don't want to get a crack at one of these tunes, you know? And so Roger Lynn is playing guitars on one of the songs. We got another Tolson here, Steve Ripley, a very talented, interesting, diverse guitar player.
Yeah.
Leland Sklar is no slouch as a bass player.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and then the illustrious Ken Stringfellow.
Yeah.
So that's just a little smattering of some of the talent, besides some of the guys in my live show playing on it as well.
That's fantastic. Are you about to go? You're going out to California. Are you going to do some shows out there? Is that what you're doing?
I'm actually just going to do an in-store appearance.
Okay.
And do a short little acoustic set.
Great. So, man, let me ask you this. You've been putting out records for 40 years.
Yeah, I know.
It's
a lot of laundry, isn't it?
That is your vinyl 8-track cassettes, like the mediums have changed.
Mm-hmm.
The playing field has changed.
Mm-hmm.
The music has changed. And by the way, let me tell you, your record is so great, and you're in such form. It's very inspiring to know that one can keep on making music that's vibrant. There's a vibrancy to your music, you know, on this record always. There's like, it's exciting to listen to, and it sounds like somebody really making a record, not like, you know what I mean? Like, it's nice to see someone that's still excited. Yeah, yeah. Or you know.
Yeah, we're still infatuated by what we do. It's still magical to us.
That's amazing.
We call our studio our magic box.
That's good. That's very good. So in all this time of putting out these records and like, how does it look to you? Are you at all intimidated by all of the change that's happened by Spotify, by all the social media and everything?
You know, I don't know if intimidated is the word. There is one thing, though, that I think a lot about these days, that has me really disappointed, and that is the fact that there's like a whole generation of people that really don't listen to music, don't hear music anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're listening on their computer or little buds in their ears.
Yeah.
And they have no idea, sonically, the huge amount of sound and a part of the music that they're missing. They're just not hearing it all.
No.
Actually, we've had people come in at times in our studio, and it's like they're kind of like in shock because they haven't heard music.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The whole generation that literally has not really heard music, because you know there was a time when you would be invited to someone's house
because they just got the new Dwight Twilley record or something.
Or they would show off their, tell you about how great of speakers they had and what kind of turntable. And everybody would sit around, and they'd put on some brand new record called something like Revolver.
Yeah.
And you'd listen to the record from top to bottom, you know, extremely loud.
Yeah.
And it was like an experience for this group of people, you know. It was really exciting, and everybody was more excited about music. Now it's just like people run away into the corner and not, you know, or they have it in their ears where no one else is listening with them.
Yeah.
And they're not hearing the whole record. They're hearing like 30% of the sound. So many nuances and things that we take so much time, you know, and detail to create are never heard.
You're right.
And so it's, you know, in a way we feel fortunate that this particular record and our last few records, they transfer well to that, you know. They sound good on a computer and a little earbud. And or in a little car cassette or something, you know, or DVD, CD player in your car.
Yeah, whatever the heck.
And it sounds good, and we're just lucky about that.
Yeah.
But it is. It kind of makes me sad. It's unfortunate. If there's anything about the new technology that I'm uncomfortable with, it's that. That's thinking about the fact that my art. People are only hearing a tiny percent of what I'm really doing.
Yeah.
And I'm not the only one in the boat. This is almost every artist that exists.
Yeah.
So that was my speech on that.
How do you take in music now? Like, how do you find new music? How do you listen to music? Do you still listen?
I never have. I've always thought that if there was something important I needed to hear, it always came to me. You know, it would always end up in my face. I never searched for it. I never went and bought everybody's album and listened top to bottom. I didn't really want to be influenced by anything. I like my original influences, you know.
Yeah, you have a very unique sound under yourself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, from going back to the Beatles and a lot of the 60s artists and back to Elvis and all the great artists of that time, you know, the Everly Brothers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
On and on. And I'm stuck with the radio, I just assume listen to an oldies station.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm down with that. Do you get to get out, do you play any pop festivals? Like, I know that some friends of mine went to go see you a few years ago at South by Southwest.
Yeah, we do quite a few. We did a big one in New York.
Yeah?
A few months back, yeah.
The CMJ?
I don't know what it was called. All I know is that people came. Sometimes you wonder, just looking at it, I'm standing in front of a 600-seater with my name on the bill thinking, is anybody going to show up?
But people do.
It was sold out. Was
yeah,
good.
People love you, man. I mean,
yeah, we did real well in Canada recently when, so, yeah, we do.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say, and we intend to get out and about quite a bit. We hope to.
Is that...
We're going to take a little time away from recording. We've been recording nonstop. If you think about it, we've done 3 albums in a 4-year period.
Mm-hmm.
From 2010 to 2014.
Right.
3 full studio albums of all new material. That's more than a lot of bands do in their whole careers.
Yeah, it's true.
And so we're going to step back away from recording. It'll be hard to do, but it's so addictive. But and try to get out more and kind of address some other little issues and little dreams and things we want to take care of.
Like what? Do you want to share those?
Well, I'm very interested in capturing my artwork. I've been doing art all my life.
Did you do the cover of Always?
Yes, I did.
Oh, awesome. I love it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so you've been doing art all your life.
Yeah. And I've never sold it. I've showed it a few times.
Uh-huh.
But there's so much of it. And I always wanted to do a book. And because of color and all that kind of stuff in the past, it was really not... It's too expensive to do a book. It costs too much to have it transferred, you know?
Yeah.
In the old days. But now with scanning and... all that cost kind of disappears.
Right.
And it may be in several different formats. It might be in the form of a documentary. It might be in the form of like an art ebook. But I'd like to make prints. But basically just while I still have it before it gets burned up or lost or a flood or something.
Yeah.
I would like to capture and protect, you know, digitally capture all the artwork I've done throughout my life. And a lot of it relates directly to the music. There's even, you know, like I have a drawing for I'm on Fire. This song, you know, while I'd be working on a song, sometimes I'd have the drawing that went along with the song or a painting.
I've done similar sort of things. And, you know, there's a guy, do you know who Jay Joyce is?
It doesn't ring a bell.
He's a producer and guitar player guy in Nashville, and he told me this thing like 15 or 16 years ago about how healthy it is to keep two studios going at once if you paint and then the music one. So you just bounce between each one, and every time you hit a wall in one, you go to the other and do something.
That's a good thought.
I don't know what happens if you hit a wall in both of them. I guess you leave for a while. But do you do it like that? I mean, do you use it as kind of like a therapy, since there's not as much weight on it as it is as there is your music creatively, that you have this other creative outlet that doesn't have as much pressure on it? So
I think that in the last 10 or more years, ever since I got my own studio, I've definitely strayed away from graphic art. I've done a few things, but it's the studio, having your own studio, which is a luxury, it's just so addictive that you find it hard to turn it off.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Are those videos, the video when you go right to your website, which is DwightTwilley.com, when you go right to your website, there's two videos. There's one of you that has like Merv introducing you and stuff, and then has you singing in the studio. That's your studio?
Yes.
It's nice, man.
With our circular window.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Big Oak Studio.
So, you have this studio. Do you ever produce other people?
No, there's really just not time for it.
I can see that with how prolific you are.
For a friend or something, or just something fun, little project. We've done a few things, but it's really strictly a matter of we're usually just into an album.
Yeah.
And there's just no time for it.
Yeah. Hey, tell me about this Beatles album, because I didn't even notice it until today, and then I was listening to it. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. What an undertaking.
Yeah, it really was just somebody paying us money to record Beatles songs.
Oh, really?
And we didn't really take it very seriously. How can you turn it down? It was just somebody wanted to pay us, and we'd do one, and then they'd say, oh, God, you got to do this one, and they'd pay us more, and do this one. It wasn't really our project or, you know, our idea or creation. And I know some people enjoy it, but I don't really, like, even really consider it a Dwight Twilley album.
No.
It's just like a collection of covers.
Sure. I've done that. I've even recorded some of the same ones that you did. They're not as good, though. That's what's sad. When I heard yours, I was like, damn it. But I have friends that have done the same thing. Are there any other creative projects outside of the art thing that you're going to do this year that you were saying you wanted to do some outside stuff? Documentary?
There's still a documentary that's in the works. And while we're in Los Angeles, we're going to be having some meetings with some people that are interested in that project. and the possibility that they might melt together between the art and the art and the story, the documentary story. So it's all kind of a lot of head scratching going on.
Yeah.
You know, and just business things.
Right.
Things that we haven't paid enough attention to because we've been so busy recording.
Yeah,
so we're getting a lot of action in with film and television at the moment.
That's great.
And I know you probably heard of the movie You're Next.
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty successful. And the main song in the film, the only song in the film, actually, is the song Looking for the Magic.
That's great.
From the Twilly Don't Mind.
Right.
Second album by the Dwight Twilly Band. And it's there's a real popular video on YouTube from a television show. It was called Wacko back 77 or so. You can look it up.
But you are, yeah.
Look up Dwight Twilly Looking for the Magic.
I must have seen it today.
For the Magic, you can find it. And people like the fact that it's Bill Peacock the Fourth and on guitar, and Phil Seymour on drums, and Tom Petty on bass.
Yeah.
And I'm playing the piano. And,
yeah.
And so
how did
with the film, and it's kind of made our audience change. We have a lot younger audience, and they all know the words and sing along, and that's kind of fun. And for some reason, it's like coming out in like 5 more motion pictures over the next year or so.
That's great, Dwight.
And a couple of television shows as well.
Great.
Big ones. And why? I have no idea.
Well, you know what? Good songs last. That's why. You know,
yeah, your songs, they can come back and take care of you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good feeling, I bet. Hey, tell me about this. So you and Tom Petty were label mates on Shelter.
Right.
And that's how you knew each other?
Yeah.
And obviously, there's no way either of you guys couldn't be fans of each other's music.
Because
you're both amazing.
I've always been a fan of
that. Yeah.
From the minute I met Tom.
Yeah, do you guys still stay in touch?
No, hardly. Yeah, I think he's like too big a star now to talk to me.
No way. That's what I thought about you. I was like, when I contacted Jan, I was like, well, I don't know if Dwight Twilly. I've actually been thinking about this since Ron was on my show. Let me ask you then a couple of questions about these TV shows, because I did have some questions. What was it like being on Solid Gold? Because I was like, that was my, like, I was like, I'm 46. So like that show came out, I was super into music, and I used to tune into that show every week to see my bands play.
Right.
And today when I saw you performing Girls on there, I noticed the people clapping all the way through it. That was really annoying. And then I was like, man, that show must have been so fucking weird to do.
It was actually one of the good ones. It was fun. Yeah, and it had real good camera work.
Yeah,
it
they did
good
have good camera work.
Show.
Yeah.
We were on that show a number of times. It looked good, you know, and it was well produced. And but like, for instance, the exact opposite was the show that I think was on the same time called Dance Fever.
Oh, you were on Dance Fever?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, with Danny Terrio. Yeah, they used to go on back to back.
Did they?
Yeah.
I forget. But, you know, like the camera work, it was like night and day.
Right.
I know that we were doing the song Why You Want to Break My Heart on there once.
I love that song.
And they turned up the, you know, the smoke cloud while we're playing the song. And I mean, you know, and the band was like crying. It was just like so severe. You could barely see us.
That's hilarious.
Somebody like overdid it or something. It was like the studio was on fire or something.
That's some Spinal Tap shit. Have you ever thought of writing a book?
I have written a book. I published a book in
1994.
Yeah,
Letters with Your Daughter.
You're talking to a published author.
Yeah, sorry,
sir.
I'm sorry.
Well, and I'm looking at a possible book with this artwork.
Oh yeah, right. Well, let me. What's the name of that book? The book that you put out.
Questions from Dad.
Questions from Dad. Is that's mostly just explain that book to me.
it was just a thing about, you know, a way for a method for people to communicate in a long distance way with kids, because so many people, you know, are separated from their you know, wife or something, wife yes. moves away to God knows where, or
right.
somebody's in the military or in prison or something, and it was just a little method to help people communicate. And, it did seem to kind of help some people, and I got a little award for it from the Children's Rights Council.
That's really beautiful,
and,
man.
I spoke in Washington, did all that kind of crap, but at the end of the day, I don't think I'd do it again. It was like I felt strange going on television without a guitar.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah, you seem like you're definitely a musician.
Yeah.
Like, not to go back and belabor the girls video, but even like you do silly very well with the straight face in that video, like with the shaving cream and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't seem like a you wanted your... present yourself much more outside of playing music.
Not much.
In that way, yeah. sorry, I got a cough.
Good, it's you and not me.
Yeah, it is me. So it's going to be a big year, a great year. I'm excited to see this. I'm excited to see what you guys do, and I'm hoping that someday we can meet. Are you planning on making it down to South by Southwest at all this year, or do you have any plans to tour?
I remember being at the airport. I've done that several times, and we always have a good time, and we always have a big crowd. But you know, leaving South by Southwest, I'm at the airport, and lo and behold, you know, I couldn't quite get out of there without, you know, some news team coming up to me, and they asked me, you know, what is the best thing about South by Southwest? And I said, leaving. You know, I don't like the way that they handle it, where the band's got exactly 35.4 seconds to do a set,
yeah,
and throw your gear off and on stage, and you know, it's kind of like trying to make a band play under the worst circumstances and see how well they do. It's almost like a game show or something,
right? I always feel bad for bands that like come from Japan and they're like thrown in this parking lot of like, you know, a hot dog place.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know,
so in a way, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of disrespectful to musicians in a way. But I know a lot of people have a great time there, and it serves a lot of purposes. It's good for people to, you know, connect with people. And I've done it before, and I've had fun doing it before, but it's not on the top of my wish list.
No. But is when you tour with a full band. Do you ever do solo tours?
I have never done a solo tour. But I may, in the future, with the artwork, I might go around and not play clubs and play art galleries and do like a little acoustic set and then, you know, show my artwork and sign artwork for people. So that concept has been floating around because they make it hard for you to tour these days, too. It's so expensive.
It is.
And certain parts of the country are terrible. And you know how there's certain parts of the country, like if you're trying to go from Tulsa to L.A., for instance, there aren't that many places you can play along the way.
Right.
You know, to pay for your gas and your hotel rooms and all that. But, you know, we've been thinking about the idea of forget playing at the clubs. If there isn't a club, or if the clubs want to treat you crappy,
right.
Almost every town has an art gallery.
Yeah.
And it might just be a fun, intimate way to go across and promote Always and show some artwork and add a little music into it. So that's something we're toying with, you know, it's the toying stage, you might say. In fact, what I'm doing at this in-store is kind of like a little bit like that. So it's going to be kind of a tester to see how that goes.
Well, good. Well, I'm curious.
I'm not a real troubadour kind of guy.
Right.
And actually, if you think about my music in general, it's not really
solo acoustic guy.
It's not really it's not designed really for like one singer and a guitar.
No, it's like a power pop band music.
Yeah, but there are some songs that you can pull off.
Yeah, sure.
So
sure.
That.
I mean, do you look at yourself as being akin to all of those 2020, the Plimsolls, the Knack?
Yeah, they were all guys who were kind of in the same genre.
Yeah. And what about all of the resurgences? Were you ever, did you, well, obviously the Posies, you worked with Ken.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever listen to like Jellyfish or anything like that?
I never really listened to much of anybody.
Okay, I didn't know if it just came across you, or maybe you toured with them or something. Or
oh, a lot of times, most of these guys, we'd but one time or another, we did shows together. I think Big Star opened for us a lot of times.
Wow, yeah, that was an amazing band. One of my faves. Well, man, I love this album always. I encourage all people to go and get it. They can go to DwightTwilley.com and pick things up.
Yeah, it's a good place to get it, especially if you want it signed.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You can get a signed copy. You know what? I'm going to do that now. Thank you so much for doing it. Is there anything that I'm missing? Is there anything you want to tell
people? Well, I would hope you would invite people to join us on Facebook.
Yes.
At Dwight Twilley Fan World.
Okay, Dwight Twilley
Don't
Fan World on Facebook.
Dwight Twilley, he's not a snob, he's just full.
Yeah.
He can't have any more friends.
No more friends.
So join us at the Dwight Twilley Fan World.
Okay.
And just about everything that we post on our main page anyway, we post there too. So you can follow what we're doing and look back and see what we've done in the past. And we put up some really interesting posts. In fact, we had a great post that had like 300 likes like yesterday or something on New Year's Eve. We put up a picture of me and Dick Clark.
Oh yeah, how was that? How was American Bandstand?
Have a happy
rockin' New Year's.
Happy rockin' New Year's Eve. You know,
yeah.
People really liked that. So just we'd love to hear from all the people out there.
Yeah, there's people out there.
Join us on the Fan World.
Okay. And the social media. And, are you also on Twitter?
We are, but my wife knows all that stuff. Okay. I wouldn't know.
So just go to the Dwight Twilley.
Just look for Twilley on Twitter.
Yeah.
We don't tweet much, though.
Okay. Just go to the Dwight Twilley Fan World. That's the main one. Mm-hmm. And DwightTwilley.com for all your Dwight Twilley needs. Well, man, thank you so much for doing the show. And I
enjoyed it.
Yeah. Take care, and thank you so much for all the great music. I'm a huge fan, and it's great to an honor to get to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Dwight Twilley. Fantastic, right? I'd love to thank Dwight for being on the show, and I'd like to thank Jan Twilley for setting it all up. Don't forget, if you are in Los Angeles, California, you can see Dwight doing an in-store at Wombleton Records Wednesday, January 14th at 8 p.m. That's Wombleton Records, 5123 York Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90042. Their phone number is 213-422-0069. Get to Wombleton on Wednesday, January 14th at 8 p.m. and see some Dwight Twilley. All right? I'm looking forward to some of that artwork, man. I like what I've seen so far, and I think I'd like to get a Twilley for the studio here. That's what I'd like to do. Okay? You can pick up his album Always on the internet. Get a signed copy, man. Go to DwightTwilley.com, get yourself a signed copy. We're going to play the title track, Always, from the album Always, right here as soon as I finish talking. Get out there, DwightTwilley.com, get a signed copy. And also you can like his Facebook page, which is Dwight Twilley Fan Page, I believe is what it's called. You'll see it. If you type in Dwight Twilley Fan, you'll find the page. Go like it. You can also like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Once again, a lot of thanks to Dwight for all of the music. A lot of thanks to Jan for setting this up, okay? How about some music from his album Always? Here's the title track, Always, from Dwight Twilley. Let's get down.